FM, KCSN, and KCSN HD1 Northridge, Los Angeles. KSBR and KSBR HD1 Mission Viejo. A service of California State University Northridge and Saddleback College. Member-supported public radio. Streaming on the web at thesocalsound.org.
Well, hello. A very happy Wednesday evening to you all, and welcome back to The Soundtrack. I am your rarely genial host, Lev L. Spiro, and tonight we have a very special guest with us, music supervisor extraordinaire Gary Calamar. Gary, say hello.
Hello, everybody.
No, come on, say it like you're, pretend you're happy to be here, man. Come on, try it again one more time. And
hello.
So much better. Thank you, Gary. This is going to be awesome. Okay, so I have so many questions to ask you, sir, but first, I want to put a track in our ears from one of your many fine shows, which I'm going to tell us all about in a moment. I think this track is going to be instantly recognizable to a lot of listeners. It goes like this.
When you came in, the air went out. And every shadow filled up with doubt. I don't know who you think you are, but before the night is through, I wanna do bad things with you. I'm the kind to sit up in his room, heart sick and eyes filled up with blue. I don't know what you've done to me, but I know this much is true. I wanna do bad things with you. Air went out, and all those shadows there filled up with doubt. I don't know who you think you are.
That was Bad Things by Jace Everett. And that, of course, was the main title music to the opening of every episode of True Blood, for which, Gary, you were the music supervisor for, I believe it was all five seasons. Is that right?
Yes, but I believe it was more than five seasons, if I'm not mistaken. Seven or eight, as I recall.
Well,
it was good.
You.
It was good for five seasons. but yes, it went on, I think, a few more seasons than five. And absolutely, I was thrilled to be on that great show.
Cool. Well, let me just tell folks a little bit about you. For those who don't know, lots of the listeners already know who you are. But guys, for those of you who don't know, Gary Calamar is a musician, a songwriter, a radio DJ, and a music supervisor. His supervising credits include great films like Slums of Beverly Hills.
Mm-hmm, my first.
I Love You, Philip Morris, which is a great movie, and Varsity Blues. And his TV credits include shows like, oh gosh, Entourage, Las Vegas, Emily's Reasons Why Not, Longmire, Cobra Kai, I'm not done, The Man in the High Castle, and wait, here are my favorites. That was just the preliminary list. You were the music super on House, Dexter, 6 Feet Under, Weeds, and True Blood, and you're now doing this amazing new show from the writer-producers of Game of Thrones, Three Body Problems. Like, wow, man, that is one heck of a resume. Truly impressive.
Thank you. Thank you. I've been lucky to work on some great shows over the years. I've worked on some less than great shows as well. I usually don't turn down work. But yeah, I've been lucky to work with some great people, Alan Ball on True Blood and, you know, the shows that you mentioned, and especially this brand new show, Three Body Problem. I'm
very
excited about.
We're going to talk more about that. So did the other music supervisors just hate your guts because you're taking all the best jobs all the time?
Well, no, there's a lot of good projects going around, and there's a lot of talented music supervisors out there, so I don't think anybody hates guts.
That was very diplomatically said.
But
I'm going to see if I can shake you out of that.
Yes, thank you.
Sure. So, well, let's go back to that amazing track that we just heard about Bad Things. What can you tell us about how
that is an interesting story. You know, that was Alan Ball was the creator of True Blood, and I had worked with Alan previously on 6 Feet Under, along with my co-supervisor, Thomas Golubich, on 6 Feet Under. But Alan Ball told me how he goes about his writing, and he said he would, you know, do some writing and then take a little iTunes break. And at that time, iTunes had like a free song of the week. And Bad Things by Jace Everett was the free song of the week that week that he was writing. And Alan had said that this will be a placeholder. This is not the song that we're going to use ultimately in the show, but we'll use this as a placeholder for now, and we'll have Gary find the real song that we're going to use. And we tried a bunch of things. We had several artists record new songs for us. And the more we watched the show with Jace Everett's Bad Things, we couldn't beat it. And it just had that right combination of menacing and sexiness and humor and just, you know, the regionality. It was kind of, you know, a good sort of Southern rock kind of song, which the show took place in Louisiana. And we just said, no, let's just go with this great song by Jace Everett. And, you know, Jace was obviously thrilled to have his song be the theme song to this great new show. But it was funny. Yeah, my first job was to replace that song, and we just couldn't do it.
I'm glad, by the way, you said menacing and sexy, not, you know, sexy menacing, which is it's an and there. They're
right.
Not
well,
the same.
Jace told me at one point he had the lyric, "I want to do bad things to you."
Yes.
Which was too menacing.
I see.
And he changed the lyric. And not before we got a hold of it, but that was part of his writing process.
Very cool. So let's back up a second, because there's folks who don't really understand what is it that a music supervisor does. I mean, so I want to start with the basics. Tell us, please, what a music supervisor does in film and TV. I'm sure everyone's wondering, and you never talk about it on your show, The Open Road, which is a fantastic show. So do you like
Sunday nights here at 88.5, the SoCal Sound?
That was bound to happen, that promo. Okay. But when you're supervising musicians, are you sitting over their shoulders while they're writing and screaming, you know, write faster at them
with
a violin bow or something?
Not necessarily.
No.
I mean, my job as a music supervisor, I mean, simply put, is finding the songs that are, you know, mostly existing songs that are going to be in the show, whether it's playing background in a bar or a character in the show is singing it or even says it in his dialogue, his or her dialogue, or it's an end credit use. We are we music supervisors are creatively trying to find the perfect song for the scene. And after we find the song, you know, I mean, it's all a collaboration with the showrunners and the editors and everybody and the producers and the writers. But it is the music supervisor's job to find the song and pitch it to the showrunner, and hopefully the showrunner, you know, usually I'll come in with, you know, two or three song ideas for a scene, and hopefully the showrunner will say, Gary, that is amazing. You've done it again. You're brilliant. but sometimes they say, yeah, not bad. What else you got?
Yeah.
So we try and find the song creatively that we're going to use in various scenes in the show. And then after we find the song, then it's my job to license a song, to go to the record labels or whoever owns the master recordings, go to the writers and the publishers and negotiate a deal. And hopefully we can clear it and, you know, have it work within our budget. And, you know, everything is hunky-dory.
So there is a process of negotiation. It's not
absolutely,
just
absolutely. I mean, I need to reach out to the record labels and the publishers and work out a deal.
Yeah. And I should just make clear also that we talked about this a bit on the first episode of the soundtrack. There are two kinds of music in any film and TV project that you're liable to hear. One is score. Mm-hmm. In film school, we call that non-diegetic music. And then you're talking about songs. And the difference, and nobody in the industry ever uses the words these words diegetic and non-diegetic. Purely film school. But basically, diegetic music is music that the characters can hear. Non-diegetic is music that only the audience can hear. So that would be score, what the composer.
Well, also there could be, scenes where, it's just kind of playing in the background and the characters are not necessarily hearing it.
Sure.
Again, end credit songs or things like that. But
yeah, and the music that you're bringing in can also be used as non-diegetic music. It's a song that's playing over the end credits, or like you
right.
just said. Yeah.
And as I said, most of the songs that we're using are existing songs, but we do occasionally, and in True Blood we did this quite a bit, where we'll have reach out to artists and say, hey, can you write us a song for this end credit? And I think we might hear some of that in
okay,
a little bit.
That is a great segue. So here is a track that I was thrilled to hear for the first time. It's from one of my favorite songwriters, Beck. And it doesn't appear on any of his albums. And when you told me about it, I looked up. I was like, this is a great song. So how did this come about before we hear it?
We just reached out to some of our favorite artists and said, we're working on this great show, True Blood. And again, True Blood was kind of hot at the time. Alan Ball was coming off 6 Feet Under, which was an amazing show. And we reached out to people like Beck, and we reached out to Lucinda Williams, and we reached out to, Eric Burdon and, Los Lobos to record new songs for us.
Amazing.
And Beck wrote us this great song, Bad Blood.
And so with no further ado, here is Beck with Bad Blood.
Thank you.
That is a great track. I love that track.
It's a beauty.
It's Beck. So, Gary, anyone listening would presume that you're here because I paid you huge sums of cash to come back to the studio tonight, and that's true, but we also know each other from both working on the show Weeds a few years back.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So how do you approach a show like Weeds? Were you sent the pilot script before you interviewed for the gig? Did you you came in the second season, right?
So I came in the second season. I was a fan of the show in the first season. I mean, a show about weed, yes. Appealed to me.
Mary Louise Parker is a suburban housewife whose husband dies, and he left her in all this debt, and she takes over his illegal, at the time, marijuana business.
I don't know if it was his business, but she becomes a
kingpin,
a drug dealer. A marijuana dealer. So I came in the second season. I mean, and again, I was a fan of the show, and the tone was kind of set already at that point. And again, it was kind of a sexy show. Marijuana was not legal at that point. So, you know, a lot of artists were happy to get involved with this show because they were weed fans, and like myself. And I came in the second season. And it's interesting, you know, some of the songs that we used. You know, the producers have certain characteristics that they like in their songs, whether the song is going to be like on the nose, where the lyrics actually kind of tell you what's happening in the scene.
Right.
Or some producers or directors or showrunners say, we don't want it to be on the nose.
We want
it to kind of. And I remember in Weeds, one of the first episodes, well, I think it was a show that you might have directed, had a song by Jenny Owen Youngs in the show. And again, Mary Louise Parker was a drug dealer, and she finds she's having an affair with a guy who happens to be a DEA agent. She didn't know it at the time, but she woke up in the next morning and she sees his jacket and says DEA on the back of his jacket. And we used a song by Jenny Owen Youngs called, I'll clean it up, called F Was I. What the F was I thinking?
Yes.
And that would be an example of a song being on the nose. And it worked great. And again, in Weeds, had a very small music budget, as I recall. So we kind of were reaching out to favors and people who were sympathetic to the show.
Now, was that show more of a tonal challenge than usual? And I ask that because, you know, it would swing wildly from dark comedy to drama, sometimes even delving into farce. I mean, does that make it harder to come up with tracks or more fun?
It's definitely fun, but it can be challenging and stressful. You know, I mean, the biggest challenge on that show for me was just the tiny budget that we had for the show.
Yeah.
So, again, we reached out to artists and we told them there's not going to be a ton of money in it for you, but it's a great show and, you know, we'd love to have you in it. Actually, the second and third seasons, which are the two seasons that I worked on, one of the things that we did that I was enlisted to do was to find covers of the theme song. The theme song for the show was Little Boxes.
Little Boxes. Yeah, let's talk about
which
that.
Which is a great song from the early 60s, originally written by Malvina Reynolds, and Pete Seeger had a hit with it. And that was the theme song of the show. It took place in the suburbs. And for seasons 2 and 3, they said, let's get, you know, different people to cover Little Boxes. And again, that was my cue to go out and find people to do it. And we had some great people do covers for us. Everyone from Death Cab for Cutie to Engelbert Humperdinck.
Engelbert Humperdinck.
You know, we tried to get Tom Jones. Tom said no, and then we went to Engelbert. And
you
Engelbert,
don't hear Engelbert a lot of Engelbert Humperdinck.
Said yes. We had a French version.
These days.
We had an African-tinged version.
We're going to hear that. You had a Cambodian band.
We had a Cambodenge Fever cover for us. Randy Newman did a version for us. And, you know, it's a simple song. I was there when Randy recorded it, and he just banged it out on his piano. Again, we had the Elvis Costello version.
I'm not sure how Randy would feel about your saying he banged it out, but okay.
Yeah, I think he okayed it for me.
Okay.
I checked with
him. Oh, good, good, good.
And Elvis Costello did a version for us, and that came about because the star, Mary Louise Parker, who I love, was a friend of Elvis Costello's, and she reached out to him, and he did it.
Well, let's listen to some of these. You gave me a bunch to listen to, and they're all amazing. And I'll tell you what we're going to hear, because we're going to play them right in a row. We're going to hear this one is a 2-minute version by The Shins, which I really like. It's kind of a pure version. And then we're going to hear Elvis Costello's version, and we're going to end with a third one, also 1 minute long, by Angélique Kidjo. So without further ado, let's check out Little Boxes by The Shins.
Little boxes on the hillside, little boxes made of ticky-tacky, little boxes on the hillside, little boxes all the same. There's a green one and a pink one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky and they all look just the same. And the people in the houses all went to the university where they were put in boxes. They came out all the same. And there's doctors, there's lawyers, and business executives, and you're all made out of ticky-tacky and you all look just the same. And they all play on the golf course and drink their martinis dry, and they all have pretty children, and the children go to school, and the children go to summer camp, and then to the university where we all get put in boxes and we all come out the same. And the boys go into business and marry and raise a family in boxes made of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same. There's a pink one and a green one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky and they all look just the same.
Little boxes on the hillside, little boxes made of ticky-tacky, little boxes on the hillside, little boxes just the same. There's a green one and a pink one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky and they all look just the same. And the people in the houses all went to the university, and they were put in boxes and they came out all the same. There's a doctor and a lawyer and a business executive, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky and they all look just the same.
Little boxes on the hillside, little boxes made of ticky-tacky, little boxes on the hillside, little boxes all the same. There's a green one and a pink one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky and they all look just the same. And the people in the houses all went to university where they were put in boxes and they came out all the same. And there's doctors and there's lawyers and business executives, and they're all made up of ticky-tacky and they all look just the same. And they all play on the golf course and drink their martini dry, and they all have pretty children, and the children go to school, and the children go to summer camp, and then to university where they are put in boxes and they come out all the same. And the boys go into business, marry and raise a family in boxes made of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same. There's a pink one and a green one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky and they all look just the same.
Amazing. I love all three of those, but so which do you like best out of those three, or are you not allowed to say, like, which is your favorite child?
I mean, I like them all. Death Cab for Cutie did a great version. Robin Hitchcock, who's one of my all-time favorites, did a lovely version. And the ones that we heard, Jenny Lewis did a great version. As I said, I was there when Randy Newman recorded his, so that was very exciting.
Yeah.
And Elvis's version, I love them all. I mean, I'm just so thankful that these artists, you know, would kind of take some time out of their day to do a recording for us. And
I bet, yeah.
It was an amazing thing. And we did that the second and third season, and then we moved on because I think the show – Well, I moved out of the show at that point. Somebody else took over. They moved from there, from the suburbs. They lived in the fictional town of Agrestic, but then they moved out of Agrestic, and that song didn't really fit anymore as the opening credits.
Too bad.
Yeah.
Well, we may have to go back and listen to the Death Cab QD version. Maybe
they did a full-on version. They took it very seriously. Some of these artists, you know, took it very, very seriously.
They did, and the I noticed the drum part is very carefully thought out. It's very, being a former drummer, it's like I always attend
Regina
to that.
Regina Spektor did a great version for us.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. Do the writers and producers ever come to you with requests for very specific cues? Like, you know, we have a scene where a gypsy circus troupe is playing. Find us something cool for that. You know, and then you have to delve into your library of ideas.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we usually have this spotting session where we sit down with the composer and myself and often the writer and the showrunner, and we go through scene by scene of what's needed. You know, is it going to be score in the scene or a song? And we'll talk about what type of song they're looking for. And, you know, I do my best to go back to my little cave and try and find some songs that work for the scene. I work closely with the music editor, and I will give him or her some ideas, and they will cut them into the scene.
So I remember on the second season of Weeds, you got me a song that was by a band called Of Montreal, and I can't, the title of the song is very, very long, and I can't remember it honestly, but it was a really cool song. I'd never heard it before, and I said the editor had put it on his cut. And I was like, where did you get this from? I said, it was from Gary, the music supervisor. So do you sometimes just give a group of songs to the editors as a you can choose from these?
That's one of the things that we do. I mean, oftentimes for a show, I might give the editor a folder for various characters. Like, you know, this character might be listening, you know, this character is like in high school, and she might be listening to this group of songs.
Oh, very cool.
And this other character is, you know, an older person, and they might be listening to a different set of songs. So, yeah, I do kind of feed the editor with some ideas. But then also, you know, we after these spotting sessions, I will come through with, as I said, two or three ideas to share with the showrunner. And, you know, the showrunner will decide if they work for him or her.
I have to say, this is really interesting for me. I mean, I know a lot about this stuff, but we come at production from very different sides. Mm-hmm. I'm on set. I'm doing pre-production. And I don't know what goes on in a lot of these meetings back there. I just hear the music go, well, that's awesome. Where did that come from?
Montreal was kind of, you know, a popular indie band at the time. And I think I were playing them on my radio show at the time. And I just felt that it would be right for this particular scene. I don't quite recall what the scene was, but I'm
embarrassed to say neither do I. But I
think that, you know, their sound, you know, kind of worked with the vibe of the show.
It did very much. It was kind of a quirky sound that lent itself to comedy, which is a very tricky thing to put music to not kill. But listen, when we come back, we're going to hear a really cool track that you co-wrote that Iggy Pop performed.
Mm-hmm.
And we have lots of more interesting stuff to talk about with Mr. Gary Calamar. So first, we're going to hear some important messages from our underwriters. We'll be right back.
Why, hello there, my pretties. Julie Slater, your midday host. Join me Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. I'll spin the tunes, you lean back, and do whatever it is you do with such perfection. Every week I pick a new album to dive deeper into. It's our 88.5 album dive. Hear a new track off it each weekday just after 12 noon. And of course, there's Friday on a Friday with Jason Friday every Friday at 1 p.m. You do you, I'll do the music. Right here on 88.5 The SoCal Sound.
Support comes from Robin and Rhonda's Our World Vintage Estate Sales and Online Auctions, a local women-owned small business just a few minutes away from the CSUN campus at 2039 Glen Oaks Boulevard in San Fernando. As their slogan says, a different kind of thrift store with everything you're looking for and more. Robin and Rhonda's Our World Thrift Store. Hours and info at 818-365-3902. That's 818-365-3902.
The SoCal Sound has tickets to see Charlie Crockett on his $10 Cowboy Tour at the Greek Theater on August 9th. Thanks to our friends at Golden Voice, current members can find contest rules and enter to be eligible to win a pair of tickets at thesocalsound.org. No purchase necessary. Tickets are on sale now at axs.com. Charlie Crockett, the Greek Theater, August 9th.
Welcome to hard time. And feeling low, do you like sinning? No.
You can build branding and awareness for your business while supporting this awesome radio station. How cool would it be to have your organization be the sponsor for Nick's Pick of the Day or my 88.5 album dive? Give us a call for more info. 818-677-7163. That's 818-677-7163.
We are sitting here with Mr. Gary Calamar, music supervisor extraordinaire. Do you like that, or music supervisor to the stars?
Either one is fine.
Okay, I'm working on having the engraving made right now.
All right, you
let me know.
Perfect.
The next track I want to play for the listeners is this awesome song called Let's Boot and Rally, which you co-wrote with a gentleman named James Combs. Am I getting that correctly?
That's correct.
And a young man named Iggy Pop recorded, along with Bethany Cosentino. Tell us about how that came about.
That came about, one of the highlights of my career, that I'm so happy that it happened. Iggy had reached out. Iggy was a fan of True Blood.
Uh-huh.
And Iggy's people had reached out to me and said, hey, if you know an opportunity comes up, maybe Iggy can write a song or Iggy can do a song.
Did his people reach out to your people? Or to you directly?
They reached out directly
to me. So
the
people
talked to people.
My
people
were
off. Okay. Right. Were off that week.
Got it.
Well, great. You know, we'd love to use Iggy somewhere if there's an appropriate place to use it. We had a new writer on the show. I should also say that every episode of True Blood, the title of the episode was named after one of the songs that was in that episode.
Uh-huh.
So we had a new writer on the show, on True Blood, and she wrote an episode called Boot and Rally. And she had a song called Boot and Rally, but the song was not right for the show at all. It just was not the right genre and didn't really work. So they came to me, what are we going to do? Well, we can change the title of the episode to one of the other songs that are in the show, or we can have somebody write a song called Boot and Rally. Let's Boot and Rally. So they said, well, let's try both of those things. So I am a songwriter, and I work with my friend James Combs, who's also an excellent songwriter. And I said, let's give it a try. Let's try and write a song called Let's Boot and Rally. And we wrote a song called Let's Boot and Rally, and we said, maybe Iggy will record it. Let's reach out to Iggy. Well, I played it first for Alan Ball, and he liked it. We played him a demo. And then we reached out to Iggy and sent him the song. I said, would you record this song? And Iggy was in Italy at the time. So we had so Iggy said, yeah, let's do it. He said, here's what it's going to cost you. And so we found the money to do it. And, Iggy was in Italy at the time. So we had to find a studio in Italy for, you know, we had the backing track recorded. And Iggy went in and recorded it and did a great job. And then we reached out to Bethany Cosentino to do some backing vocals, and she added some great stuff to it. And as I said, it's something I'm especially proud of, to have Iggy record a song that I co-wrote. I mean, come on.
It's amazing. So let's take a listen. This is Let's Boot and Rally with Iggy Pop and Bethany Cosentino.
We have a little teacher.
So,
oh, yeah.
So Gary and I are cracking up in here because Mookie, who's here in the studio, comes running into the studio and goes, "Who is that? That's a great song." And I was like, "It's Boot and Rally." And Gary wrote it and Iggy Pop recorded it. He goes, "That's an amazing track." It's like, "Yeah, I'm glad you're listening to the show, Mookie. Thank you. Thank you for joining us."
I was told that I didn't need to participate, but you know, I felt compelled to run in here.
We invite participation. Yeah,
okay,
yes.
Thanks.
Yeah, well done. Thanks. And the excitement was infectious.
Again, thrilling for me to have Iggy and Bethany record a song that I co-wrote. And
I would imagine. Yeah. Oh, I know what I want to ask you about. So here's a really smooth segue. Three Body Problem.
Yes.
Which is this amazing show that you're working on right now. I think Mookie reminded of, because you know, they talk about string theory and all the different dimensions. And he just appeared out of the ether. So, right. It's a really cool show. My wife and I have watched, I think, the first six episodes so far. Tell me about that. How did you get involved
with this? I love the show. It just premiered last Thursday on the Netflix. It's from the guys who did Game of Thrones, David Benioff and D.B. Weiss, along with this other producer, Alex Wu, who mm-hmm. I worked with on True Blood.
Uh-huh.
And Alex was very instrumental in inviting me to get involved with the show. And it's a science fiction show. It's based on these Chinese award-winning science fiction books. I guess they call it hard sci-fi. There's a lot of science in it, and it's also kind of a mystery. Scientists around the world have been mysteriously committing suicide, and we're trying to find out why. Long story short, there is another planet.
Do I have to chime in here and say spoiler alert? Or hopefully you're not going to give too much away.
I think this is the basic info. Okay, I'm not giving too much away.
All right.
But there's another planet in another solar system, and their planet is dying because they have three suns, and they can't exist in the three-sun system. And they have been invited to come to Earth to fundamentally take over
our civilization. Yeah, as we know.
Initially, they're coming in seemingly in peace, but it turns out they're coming to take over. But the thing is, they're not coming for another 400 years. They're very, very far. They're in a planet far, far away.
They're slow aliens.
Yes. So that's basically the show. We've got a great composer, Ramin Djawadi, who did Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to tell too much about the specific scenes, but we have some great music by Radiohead, The Rolling Stones, Blind Faith, Stone Roses, a great track from Lana Del Rey, a great scene. So I love the show, and I hope people get to check it out.
So when Mr. Wu called you and said, I'm working on this new project, do you want to get involved?
Mr. Wu.
Mr. Wu. Did he give you a script to read? Did you, how did you discern the tone of the show coming into it?
I got a script to read, and I was definitely going to jump on a show from the guys who did Game of Thrones, and I was just
smart move,
fascinated by what the show is about. But a lot of it takes place in London in the present day, so that's kind of what I had to work with as far as picking songs for the show, because there are some bar scenes and there's some other scenes, and we kind of I tried to find British artists, because as I said, it takes place in London. And the producers were it's all a collaboration. They were very, very involved
When you're coming into a show, Gary, will you sit down with the producers and talk about tone? Will you talk about what emotional tone they want the music to convey to the viewers in a given scene? Or is that done later in the spotting session?
It's done later in the spotting session. We didn't really have spotting sessions on this particular show. Every show kind of runs their show a little bit differently. But I would see the scene, and I would see what a song was temped into the scene. Usually the editor will put a song in as a placeholder. And just try and discern what emotion is they're going for in this particular scene.
Okay. Very, very interesting. Thank you. Well, the next couple things we're going to hear are also from True Blood, I think. And what was interesting was the second song we're going to hear was what you wanted the first band to do, and they came in with something completely different.
Yes, that's interesting. Yeah, so we were looking for covers of the Laura Nyro song, "And When I Die." It was kind of a big hit for Blood, Sweat, and Tears back in the
day.
And we reached out to a few artists to cover the song And When I Die. We reached out to I was in touch with Jacob Dylan at the time and his management. And I said, hey, you know, we're looking for a cover of And When I Die. Would you, you know, like to give it a shot? And they came in with a new original song with the same, you know, vibe, the same sentiments.
And you're like, did you not understand the question?
That is kind of my initial thought. I mean, they came up with a great song that they were going to hear.
Yeah.
But the Heavy, the band The Heavy, did an amazing job in covering And When I Die. They brought in a gospel choir, and they really took it seriously, and they were really anxious to get their song, their cover on the show. But yeah, it was really interesting what Jacob and Gary Louris from the band The Jayhawks, they collaborated on a song. Instead of covering And When I Die, they did a song called Gonna Be a Darkness that they wrote, you know, with hoping to replace And When I Die.
Cool. Well, that's the first one we're going to take a listen to. So this, guys, is Gonna Be a Darkness by Jacob Dylan.
There's gonna be roses and your picture in a frame. The women will be crying and the men, they will whisper your name. Umbrellas will be open on a hillside of graves. The children will be dressed up and chase each other in the rain. And there's gonna be a darkness that may be colder than you guess. There may not be music, there may not be stairs, there may not be angels filling the air. Your mother may be there, your father may be there. There may not be voices sent from a throne to carry you home. Devil may see you first. He's hidden himself in both the beast and the bird. A stranger may have found you where the angels have lulled you to sleep, to swallow you whole like a whale from your head to your feet. And it's gonna be a darkness, maybe colder than you'd guessed. There may not be music, there may not be stairs, there may not be angels filling the air. Your mother may be there, your father may be there. There may not be voices sent from a throne to carry you home.
Was And When I Die by The Heavy. Before that, we heard Gonna Be a Darkness by Jacob Dylan. Both really cool songs. So I can't believe how quickly this has gone by. I had so many more questions to ask you. And we're going to do another question and hear another track before we go. But let me just take this moment to say I want to thank our guest, Gary Calamar, for being with us tonight. And thank you all for listening to this episode of The Soundtrack. Hey, by the way, on our next episode, we are going to delve into the beautiful world of score, composing music for film and television with composer extraordinaire Tyler Bates, who has scored amongst many other films all four John Wick movies, Guardians of the Galaxy 1, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, Deadpool and Deadpool 2, amongst many others. We'll be talking about those and lots more, so don't miss it. And make sure to listen to Gary Callamore on Sundays from 5 to 7 for his very cool radio program, The Open Road. See, I had you.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Okay, but let's come back before we have to end to this incredible track, Breathe, by Sia.
Breathe Me.
Because I wanted to ask you about, well, what, you know, what is the ideal blend of music and film? What makes that a magic pairing? And this is an amazing example of that. So tell us about it.
Well, I mean, the stars were aligned for this particular use. I mean, it was the final episode of an amazing series, 6 Feet Under. It was a fantastic final scene, which I won't get into because we don't have the time. But it was, as I said, the stars were aligned. And I pitched the song. I worked on the show with Thomas Golubich, my co-supervisor. This was a song I had been playing on the radio. It was relatively unknown. Sia, I had known, a little bit from playing her on the radio, but, her career was not going well. This album was not being released in America. I heard she was being dropped from her label. And I just thought it worked. I pitched it to Alan Ball along with a handful of other songs that I also thought worked. And again, the scene was so strong that, you know.
Well, tell us a little bit about the scene, because this is the wrap-up of the entire season.
Yes.
And she sees all of her possible futures.
It was 6 Feet Under. I mean, it was about a family that owned a funeral home, a family-owned funeral home. Every episode started with a death and how the Fisher family dealt with the death and you know, the whole politics of the Fisher family. And, yeah, this was the final scene where Claire Fisher was driving to New York to start her new life. And as she's driving, we're seeing the final days, the final death scene of all of the characters in the show. It kind of fast forwards into the future, and we see how her mother dies and how her brother dies. And this is all as she's driving home, and this is a tape that she puts into her car stereo, and it turns out to be Sia's Breathe Me. And it was just a very emotional scene, and this song just kind of fit like a glove. You know, the editor did an amazing job of extending it to fit into the whole scene, Michael Ruscio, as well as the music editor. And as I said, the stars were aligned. It was a beautiful song and a beautiful series.
I read at least four different articles saying how this was the ne plus ultra of music for film and this amazing ending. And everybody cries at this. The actors cried watching the scene.
I'm going to cry right now as we play it.
All right. Mookie, can we get some Kleenex in here, please?
I have it planned to play on my tombstone. You know, when people walk by, it'll trigger the song.
Playing.
And. You know, it's kind of my one of my claims to fame is finding this song for that scene.
On that cheery note, we're going to play Breathe Me by Sia. Gary, thank you so much for coming. It's been fascinating.
It's been a pleasure. I love your show, and good luck with the rest of the episodes. Tyler's going to be great next month, and thanks for having me.
Thank you, my friend. Here is Breathe Me by Sia.
95 FM, KCSN, and KCSN HD1, Northridge, Los Angeles. KSBR and KSBR HD1, Mission Viejo. A service of California State University, Northridge, and Saddleback College. Member-supported public radio. Voted Station of the Year by our peers in American Public Music Radio.
Hi, welcome to Bilingual Sounds.